When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are going to lose their minds. This is a moment in history unlike anything humanity's gone through. It's a very different world for humans to come.
Take a step back and see the broad picture, which is the way all these technologies are interlinked.
Because this is all about exponentiality, and humans can't think in exponential terms.
How consequential do you want to say machine intelligence is? It's almost certainly as consequential as writing. How long did writing take to disseminate through the human population? You know, hundreds, thousands of years. And we're dealing with it now on a scale of months.
But in this kind of world, you're compounding 100% growth every year, and the numbers become astronomical.
AI is going to spot patterns in the world that were just completely invisible to us.
Even if you think that the AI and the robots are your demise, you might as well bloody invest in them and make some money out of it. If not, you're just going to be angry man shaking your fists at the clouds.
It's time to officially kick off another CMC Live here on CoinMarketCap app. What are the biggest opportunities in crypto? Unveiling everything you should be looking at during the next bull cycle with not only me, your host Gabriel, but also Alice Liu, which is our head of research here on CoinMarketCap. You guys know her very well already, but also Roel Paul Alice. I mean, I think you should be the one voice to ask for an introduction for Roel. So first of all, thanks for joining me today in this interview, and then you can pass the word on to Roel.
Amazing. Thanks for everyone tuning in today. I'm very excited to have Roel Paul with us. We have a lot planned for today. So we have three sections. Firstly, we'd like to go through a year in review, talk about some key events, what's driving the market. The everything code discussion is going to be very interesting as well. Institutional investors, the second part, we will look at the different narratives, indicators, trends. And last but not least, I would love to ask Roel in the last section about what are you holding, sir, your portfolio? And also we have some very interesting fire questions as well for you.
100%. And Roel, officially then now welcome to CMC Live. It's a pleasure to have you here. We are very much excited for this conversation.
Fantastic. I'm excited for it too.
100%. Roel, before we get started, I know a lot of people know you. I mean, a lot of people know Real Vision, know you, know your takes on crypto, etc. But I feel like not a lot of people, and myself, I do not know that. And I'm eager to know your first crypto experience, like how you actually got into crypto, how you heard of crypto the first time, and a little bit, not long story, but a little bit of a background for the people that don't know you. But I'm actually very excited for that story about your first crypto experience. That is definitely going to be something for the ages, I guess.
So my story is, I was working in finance, working for Goldman Sachs, selling equity derivatives and equities to the world's biggest hedge funds. And I ran that business for many years and then eventually decided to move to Spain and started writing Global Macro Investor, which is my institutional research service, which I've been writing for 19 years. While I was in Spain, I saw the financial crisis coming in 2008. I was very worried about the debt burden in the global economy and the banking system, and I was worried it was going to blow up, and I managed to predict that and actually do quite well out of it. Then in Europe, we had a second crisis in 2010, 11, 12, which was the European financial crisis, where we almost lost not only the banking system in many countries in Europe, from Spain, where I was living, to Italy, to Cyprus, to Greece, obviously, but we almost lost governments as well. They almost went bankrupt. And it was over that period, and again, I was lucky enough to forecast that as well. But over that period, I had started to think, okay, what can I do about this? Because people will come up to me in the street and said, why don't we know? Why don't we know about this? What can we do about it? Because now we've realized that everything, that we don't own anything in the financial system. If you were in Cyprus, they took the money from your bank to bail out the bank, from your cash bank account. And so everybody started to realize they owned nothing. And the whole industry, the finance industry, realized that nobody owned anything because everything got rehypothecated, re-lent out many, many times in the system. And that was one of the big problems of 2008. So two parts of that journey. In about 2012, I started thinking about, well, how can I help people in their journey? And that was the start of Real Vision. So we thought, okay, let's bring the world's best analysts, strategists, hedge fund managers, and let them have deep dive conversations and let people listen in. That was the kind of information nobody got at the time. The other side of the equation is I went around the world trying to start the world's safest bank with a bunch of famous hedge fund guys and family offices to try and get a bank that didn't use leverage. But we eventually got told by the US authorities that they didn't want that because it would take all of the deposits from the banking system because everybody else was levered and this would be totally secure, which was quite a shock. But at the same time, an old friend of mine called Emil Woods, who was a Global Macro Investor subscriber, another ex-Goldman guy, he tapped me on the shoulder and said, have you looked at Bitcoin? So this was 2012. So I wrote the first ever... I saw it and realized immediately that not only was Bitcoin an answer to kind of the system of money and new digital gold, but I also realized that blockchain rails were going to be the rails for the new financial system when it gets built, that it had to be built because it was totally broken. And so I wrote the first macroeconomic strategy paper on Bitcoin in 2013. Nobody had ever written one before. And I started investing in 2013. So it's been a big part of my journey. It's been a big part of Real Vision's journey. On our first ever video in 2014, we talked about Bitcoin and the opportunity it's going to give people in the future. I think it's up 250,000% since that first video. So that's my crypto journey. I was very early. I kind of saw the bigger picture back then. That's my job as a macro guy and have been involved in the space ever since.
I would say that you were as early as we can be probably in the space, and definitely sounds like an OG there, just like a crazy background, a lot of experience, like in many big places, big names, as you mentioned, for example, Goldman, etc. So I just feel like it adds a lot of experience to what you've been doing and just like know, I mean, how much you're into crypto and stuff. Just like for the people that don't have a financial background that are just getting started and get a feel for crypto, it helped them, I think, to just see that are very, I mean, a lot of people that are very much into the markets way before them that are still here and that are very well succeeded, not just into crypto, but also doing other stuff before. That kind of like adds a layer of, yes, I think I'm doing the right thing. You know that? What do you think, Alice? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And also just a quick thing on Real Vision. I watch it religiously. It's a really good
fantastic
platform.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
I started when it had 10,000 subscribers. And today, I think, so your YouTube channel has something close to 700,000. So it's really nice to see the community grow.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then we've got, you know, we've obviously got subscription-based services and a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's actually free to join at realvision.com. Just people can go there and you can use our everything from our AI tools to our pricing and charting through to all the videos, the transcripts, tons of stuff. It's an amazing platform.
Definitely. And thanks for doing that. Also, since we have you here today, I would love to use this opportunity to do a year in review almost, because what a crazy year. If we look back in November last year, Bitcoin was something between $16,000 and just right before we start the live today, we are above 38,000. So even Bitcoin alone this year has gone up like 130%. And if we look back this year, so many different things happened, key events. So I was wondering, what are the key things that have left a mark if you look back for this year for the crypto journey?
So for me, it's the thing that I've learned since 2012 is that almost everything, all of the news that kept people scared or excited, most of it is all noise. You know, if you've been around in the space as long as I have, you've seen exchanges go bust, you've seen legal issues, regulatory issues, you've seen so much stuff, and it's all noise of a maturing space. And the key driver of all of this, I got incredibly bullish at the end of last year based on global liquidity in the business cycle, which we'll come onto a bit in the exponential, into the everything code stuff. But I started seeing that, and what was, and so I had I had not sold anything from the previous cycle, but I just started to add as much as I could, suggesting that was the low. And that whole thesis has played out with all of the noise, all of the screaming and shouting, all of the drama over Twitter. The markets have just gone higher. And I think that was a shock to many, many people. But overall, if I look back and say, what was last year about? Last year was, you know, a lot of people getting over their scars from the previous year. 2023 was a year of getting over the scars from 2022. People lost a lot of money in, you know, FTX and BlockFi and Celsius and all of these things. But what was happening in 2023 is the signs of people saying, okay, well, that's way of doing decentralized exchanges didn't work. Let's work on new things. The space kind of got together and tried to figure out, okay, where are the problems in the space? How can we solve them? And how can we iterate and improve? And that was something that I've always seen in this space. They kind of learn every time something goes wrong because they're building an entirely net new financial system here. That's what everybody's building. You know, it's the value system of the internet. Nobody's got all the answers. So you have to make mistakes to get the right answers. So I saw that, and I saw the regulators around the world changing their tunes, you know, between Singapore, Switzerland, Europe, and then the UK and the Middle East, all becoming much more proactive in regulating the space and realizing where this space is going. The US is, you know, further behind, but, you know, that battle is ongoing and it'll get sorted out in the end. But so we saw this kind of maturing of the space overall, learning from the past cycle. There'll be mistakes in the next cycle too, but learning from the past cycle, building upon it, and then getting the regulators to realize that crypto is not going away. Also, you know, if I step back and observe, we saw a lot of big brands using Web3. So I thought that was still interesting. A lot of the big car companies, you know, Starbucks using loyalty points, Ticketmaster using ticketing and other stuff. There was a lot of interest in blockchain technology. And also, if you filter out the noise, you can see the entire financial system is getting behind this. Many big financial firms are testing blockchain rails for settlement of securities. We're seeing real world assets come on chain. So we're seeing what I call crypto spring. And that's what I call 2023 was crypto spring. And that's the whole point. That's why it went up in price as crypto spring. You know, it thaws winter. The days get warmer, a bit sunnier, but not all the time. You know, one day it's raining, next day it's got frost. But every day, over time, over spring, things get warmer. And that's what it's been like.
And it's interesting to see. Yeah, go ahead, Alice. You're going to add to it.
Yeah, no, I think this is a very good narrative because exactly how we feel about the market right now, given however much happened last year, November time last year was just right after FTX bankruptcy. And then we've gone through the ordinals, the meme coins, the AI, FTX trial, Binance now shifting CEO, and then a lot of the different narratives and developments, as you said. So definitely echo that.
Not just that, Alice, I feel like just before jumping role, just to give people more perspective on that, like on November 28th of 2022, exactly 1 year ago, BTC price was like 16K. We are now like 38K. So if that not gives you, that gives you kind of like a, at least something to look at and say, hey, has some perspective, like may, we are not probably in the best shape or in the best moment that we ever been, but definitely things are moving in the right path, I think, right?
Yeah, and look, this is the whole game in crypto. It is a long-term time horizon. I'm not a big fan of trading it because the long-term trend is so strong. And so when you get these cyclical sell-offs driven by the economy, the interest rate cycle, the business cycle, is when you should be buying. And what happens is everybody panics and sells. And it's having the discipline to say, listen, I'm in this trade for 5 years or whatever the length of time is. And so if I've got any cash and I see these really ridiculously discounted prices at the bottom of the business cycle, and NASDAQ was selling off, it was recession talk everywhere, those are the opportunities. And if you buy in those opportunities, you compound your returns much higher than if you wait for a bull signal to happen, wherever that is, because you end up buying so much higher. So if you've got that long-term time horizon, you have that fundamental belief that crypto is going to keep growing, you know, the number of wallets, the number of active wallets in crypto in 2022, when the market was down 80%, grew 42%. And it tells you that this is not going away. So you use information like that to give you confidence to add to your investments when everybody else is panicking out.
100%. Since you have been just like kind of like mentioning it here and there, I want to start to dive deep with you into the Everything Code discussion, because I feel like that helps people understand a little bit. And like, of course, I don't know exactly what is the Everything Code, but you have been, I mean, giving some hints here and there to people in terms of indicators, like things that you look at, for example, mentioning the liquidity cycle, etc. How that, if you can just like unpack a little bit the concept of liquidity cycle as well, and also how those macro affect crypto, because I think one of the things that you mentioned that for me makes a lot of sense is just like not necessarily the halving being the main catalyst for crypto cycles, but actually the halving very well timed into macro cycles that actually kind of like helps to set up that halving narrative, let's put it like this. So I wanted you to just like chime in a little bit and I mean help people to understand what the Everything Code is about and your take also on the halving, liquidity cycle and all that, which I think will open the mind of a lot of the listeners here.
Of course. So it's actually pretty simple. It's 2008, all of the major governments, the UK, Europe, the US, Japan, China, everybody hit 100% of GDP in debt or more. And that led into the financial crisis because the private sector was in debt as well. So there was way too much debt and economic growth was not growing fast enough to service the debt. So if you don't have the income to pay your interest payments, you go bust. And that's what happened. So what happened was a lot of people talk about something called a debt jubilee, which is when all debts get forgiven. That's kind of a biblical thing that's happened over centuries where, you know, some benevolent leader says, you don't need to pay your debts. People were saying, well, we're going to have to reset the debts. But what we did in 2009 was something different, or 2008. What we did was say, you know what, instead of forgiving all the debts because it's too much and we can't do it, we're going to let you not pay interest rates. And that is what zero interest rate policy was. And then behind it, they said, well, not only that, but we're going to print dollars and all currencies so there's enough currency in the system. And that is debasement of currency. And what that does is optically make asset prices rise. So this was the story of 2008, 2009. Now, when you reset all government debt at zero interest, what they all did was kind of go out 3 to 5 years and borrow money in 3 to 5 year bonds. That means every 4 years, they have to repay the interest and reset, because they never pay off the debt from the previous cycle. What they do is they have to issue more bonds to pay the interest on the previous bonds, which is what's been going on recently, which is why the bond market got upset. So that creates a business cycle every 4 years like clockwork, because it's the debt refi cycle of all the major governments. And so the economy follows that cycle because, you know, as the economy is growing, interest rates end up rising. The economy starts slowing down because the interest payments are too big. And before you know it, we end up with stimulus. They cut rates or they keep rates flat, but they end up using the balance sheet. And the Everything Code was the discovery that the use of the balance sheet, so the Fed balance sheet, the ECB balance sheet, all of these things, was exactly just the payment of interest rates on the debt of the previous four-year cycle. So when you understand that, you also see that those cycle dates, 2008, 2012, 2016, they're all the halving years. Why? Because Bitcoin was born out of the financial crisis. So it has the same birthday as zero interest rates and this whole debt cycle. It also happens to be the election cycle. Why? Because as you come into this point in the election cycle, so we're coming into a US election next year, the incumbent government tends to stimulate to try and stimulate growth, and a new government tends to stimulate to start winning points for the next midterm elections. So there's this incredible cycle that exists. And what you can do is using a lot of the forward-looking indicators we've got based around the interest payments, for example, from the pandemic, you can start to extrapolate where the central bank balance sheets are going. And what we found is, if you look at some global liquidity forecast that we've got, it actually explains like 97.5% of the entire movement of the NASDAQ and about 87% of crypto. The reason why it's less of crypto is crypto bull markets tend to be exponential, so it lowers the correlation. So basically, the crypto cycle is the macro cycle, and it's driven by the liquidity created by the central banks to service their own debts. And for me, if this continues, now, this is, you know, it's still a thesis, even though it's been going on for a while, but I only discovered it 2 or 3 years ago, is 2 years ago. If this continues, then it is a gift of an opportunity because we understand the world with which we're living, which is nobody can pay the debts, nobody can pay the interest on the debts, and therefore it ends up becoming expansionary monetary policy, which debases the currency and causes assets to rise. Now, this is exactly the reason why crypto exists. It was to find a way out from this. And so that's why it tends to do very well, because it's a massive adoption of a technology, the fastest ever adoption of a technology and the fastest moving asset price in all history. And what you find is that over time, people start to understand that this liquidity cycle and the debasement of currency, the answer is migrating across to the new financial system. I called it in the past the Bitcoin life raft. It's the life raft to save you from losing your savings. And also the life raft to save you from the debasement of currency and the fact that wages don't go up as much as asset prices. So you kind of get poorer all the time. You can't afford a house. So the average millennial is struggling to buy a house because their wages don't match the increase in asset prices. And crypto is the levelizer for all of that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a very good analysis. It's a very it's interesting to hear this based on how it also the trend of crypto market is very much linked to the traditional market and the liquidity and the monetary policy. And I think right now, given how complex the market is, and not just the different economic policies, but also geographical risks that we're seeing with the wars going on, it's very confusing for traditional investors. So I think that's why some of them are looking at crypto into this space and see if there are any opportunities here. So naturally, I actually want to tap on that a little bit to talk about institutional investors, because first thing first is definitely I want to ask about your view on the spot BTC ETFs. Do you see any potential SEC approval? What do you think the magnitude of this?
Okay, so I'm going to frame how to think about this in a different way. So yes, I think it gets approved. Whether it happens before Christmas or in January, who knows? But either way, it's coming. But what does this mean? So you've got to understand a framework of, okay, we have this TradFi fiat world, which is the regular economy we live in, that's ruled by dollars or yuan or yen or euros, whatever. And then we have this new crypto land, which is this new digital economy that is borderless and growing incredibly fast. So when you think about economies, you look at economies and economic growth is driven by population growth, productivity growth, and debt growth. So in fiat world, population is now shrinking or slowing down in most countries around the world, major countries. Productivity has been low because of an aging population, and debt growth blew up in 2008, and debt growth now is just servicing of old debts. So lo and behold, you've got a slow economy. Cryptoland, we had a massive recession in 2022, down 80% in prices, and what we saw was a 42% increase in population, new active wallets. And it keeps growing. So we've got a massive increase in population in this new emerging economy. It's growing faster than any economy in history. And it's generating enormous return on investment for anybody involved in it who's got a long enough time horizon. So the ETF is you need to think of it as a trade deal between fiat world and crypto land. So it doesn't guarantee that people are going to make investments into crypto land, but the trade agreement means that they can. Now, the question is, all of the fiat world investors are going to say is, am I going to get a higher return on my investment in crypto land or fiat world? And with a year like this year, it's very clear that when the business cycle is going to recover, crypto land will do better. So we will see, I think, both the Bitcoin and ETH ETF, when they come over time, seeing a lot of money pouring into crypto land. We're also seeing in crypto land, fiat world companies setting up offices. And what I mean by that is people like Fidelity, Franklin Templeton, BlackRock, all of these people, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, they're all kind of setting up offices in this new world and being involved with it. That's really interesting. On the flip side, we've got Coinbase, for example, which is a crypto land company that's got its main offices in fiat world. So we've got this new economy that's global, frictionless, and growing at an astonishing pace. And the ETFs are going to be a way to allow people to invest out of the fiat world into this world in a way that is easier for them to manage.
Hey everyone, we're going to take a quick pause and hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back.
I was wondering, because we already have existing BTC products out there like MicroStrategy. So I don't know, with this ETF approval, what do you think is going to happen with the existing products?
Well, you know, MicroStrategy is not a product. It's a corporation with a lot of Bitcoin on its balance sheet. So my guess is that unless their traditional business grows, it will trade at maybe a discount, much like the GBTC trust did. It ended up trading at a discount because there's other options. So it probably trades at a discount. Now, what does it do to the crypto miners? I think they're probably fine. They're underinvested anyway. I think, you know, stuff like Coinbase does very well in this environment. But the Bitcoin ETF, really, how I think of it is, yes, there's some traditional market companies that will not have the flows because there's more access now. But really, it's that money that flows into the crypto economy and gets recycled out the risk curve in the crypto economy that can have an astonishing impact. Because what happens is, as soon as people start making gains in Bitcoin, it starts spreading into ETH and into Solana and then down the risk curve and out to NFTs and all over the economy. And that's typical of a trade deal. If, you know, the US does a trade deal with China and they start building factories, those factories, workers, they get money, they start buying stuff, and it becomes this multiplying process. So yeah, look, yes, it makes some issue for some companies, but over time, it's net good for everybody.
As I like to say here, Alice, not sure if you agree with that and also your role, but just like being here to see all that play out and all that just like in front of our eyes, just like being in the crypto space during this unique time, I'll say, because let's face it, it's only going to happen like one time. The first Bitcoin ETF approval in the US is only going to happen one time. The first ETH ETF, same thing. And just like getting to, I mean, to feel, to be here, to have our skin in the game when all those things take place is going to be very valuable. Because as you said, Ro, like you're in the market since 2013, so you have experienced a lot of things in the market. You know stuff that a lot of people that are listening to us right here don't know about. There are many people that have been in the market as long as you, or even a little bit longer, maybe, who knows. But like, I think that experience just adds value to it in many, many different ways. And I think that is just a special time that we're living in. So guys, make sure to enjoy it and like take advantage of the opportunities. And I think I have a question for you exactly when I talk about opportunities, Raul, because As you mentioned before, during our initial part of the chat today, a lot of narratives going on in crypto, right? But we do have the fundamental indicators as well. So how do you think people can actually navigate narratives versus indicators, etc.? Like any tips for the audience? Because I do know, for example, you do take a lot into consideration Metcalfe's law, for example. So do you think that is something that people should be looking more at? Which type of indicators do you look to make a correlation between Metcalfe's law and assets in the crypto space, etc.? So just help people that are completely lost here, like what they should be looking at.
Okay, so here's the weird thing about Metcalfe's law. So Metcalfe's law, for people who don't understand, is how you value networks, because we live in this digital network age, is how you value kind of the value of a mobile phone network or something like Facebook, whatever it may be. And it's basically the number of people on the network and the number of connections between them. Or the amount of value that gets exchanged on that network. And so I started thinking about this and started trying to build out some models for cryptocurrencies on this. And I found out that the best fit was the number of active users in a week or a month, you take the period, and then the amount of value transacted on that protocol over that same period of time. And what I found is when I put those together, it exactly mirrored the price, even though price was not a component of either of those two things. And that gave me this kind of shocking realization that crypto was valued correctly. It's valued correctly at most periods of time. And that worked for pretty much every chain I looked at. So that says the price is correct as of today. So there's no kind of price arbitrage. So then it's looking into the future, is what can change that equation? How do you increase the number of active addresses or the value transacted on chain? So then it's looking at, you know, what are the use cases being built? This is how I got into Ethereum in the last cycle, is I realized Ethereum was building a ton of use cases and it was a very active chain. It's what got me into Solana this time around for the same reasons, because if you start, the prices are more exponential the earlier in that trend, but it's difficult to pick early stage tokens because you don't really know if it's going to get network fit. But the moment you see network fit and Metcalfe's law in action, you know there's a big opportunity. So Metcalfe's law doesn't help. So I find bizarrely that obviously technical analysis, if price is right, gives you some sort of comfort where you are and where you're going. You know, it's an art, not a science. But then just understanding the simple liquidity cycles. Where are we in, I think you can get it on TradingView, Global M2, year on year. If that's going positive, then crypto's going up. And it's cyclical. It's the nature of this everything code cycle we've been talking about. So that can give you a huge amount of comfort. It doesn't necessarily project prices. We've got price projections from the everything code, but I don't talk about them because, you know, the crypto market people, they take prices and they assume it's fact. You don't know. But what we do know is increasing liquidity, Global M2, you can find that chart, pretty straightforward, that works. The Fed balance sheet, that's another one. Fed net liquidity, that's another one. Or even if you can't access those, the ISM survey, when it's at the bottom and turning higher, which is where we've been for the last few months, that's a really good signal that the business cycle is about to improve in the future because we're at the bottom of it. So the future is going to be higher. And when you get much higher, when you get to 58, 60, 65 in the ISM survey, which is the best guide to the business cycle, is when you want to be reducing risk in the space because liquidity is going to change because normally interest rates start rising at that point. So there's some key macro indicators that just really help understand where you are and give you the confidence over the cycle in where to take risk and how to take risk.
I feel like I'm starting to connect a lot of dots here as you speak about just like Metcalfe's law, like the everything code and a lot of other people that you have touched on throughout our chat so far. But I have two things that you mentioned, like two questions in one for you right now. First of all, like when you talk about Metcalfe's law and how do you, it's one of the things that of course you look at in order to try to understand value of specific networks, etc. I would like to ask you specifically for ETH. For example, when you think about ETH scaling via layer 2s, for example. Does that still fit into that concept? And also if yield and burn are in some kind of way quantified, that because of course now you have yield that people are earning for staking their ETH, and also you have ETH being burned. And I know that is, I mean, a big position that you have, but not touching a lot in the portfolio because we're still going to cover that. But like, how do you value that when trying to put it together?
Yeah, so what was the first part? ETH and... Hello?
I think the first part...
I was muted, yeah. Sorry for that,
welcome
guys.
Back.
Yeah, no worries. But just like, I'm trying to understand, for example, ETH scaling via L2s. That is
Into
the Metcalf slot? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so L2s are just network activity, but they're light. Because you're batching transactions, I don't know what the multiplier is, depends on the layer two, but let's assume it's 1,000 transaction on a layer two equals one ETH. So you need a lot of scale on the layer twos to add to the value of the network. But that's what the layer twos do. So it's a red herring to look at the layer twos per se. You kind of need to look at the network activity, but the more activity in the layer twos, the more it's going to use blockchain space on ETH itself, and that drives value to the network. So it does work, it's just not as intensive as, let's say, a NFT or something else that uses the mainnet. In terms of ETH staking and yield, I did notice that ETH traded at a premium to its Metcalfe's law somewhat as soon as the ETH burning mechanism started to come. So because it's now more deflationary and the staking yields, the market prices seem to have adjusted to take that into account. And that makes sense, you know, because it's different cash flows now than it used to be. So in which case it trades differently somewhat to its Metcalfe's law valuation than, let's say, Bitcoin does or XRP does. So it's interesting. And I think, you know, the ETH yield is a very big story for the institution space because they do like yield. And I think that will continue to drive network value.
100%. And as we have more than 2K people listening to us right now, you mentioned one specific token, which is Sol, during your previous response to us here. And I'd like to understand with you, because you have mentioned already about changing and rebalancing positions before and potentially benefiting from, for example, the BTC Ethereum cross in 2020, and more recently also talking about the Ethereum Sol cross, of course, in a very different scale, but just like looking at it in a quote-unquote similar way. Do you think Sol is still poised to keep up the recent run during the next bull market? Because I feel like I've seen you mentioning about it in other places before. And I do know that a lot of people that are listening to us always like those, of course, tokens that are not, I mean, that are pumping more than others. So just, I mean, give some hints on what you think about Sol potential, etc. And how are you looking at it at this very moment in the market?
So look, I'm very bullish Sol for this cycle. Of course, there will be others that outperform. But I find it harder when you go further out the risk curve to smaller tokens with less proof. So you don't know those first cycle tokens, what's going to do well. It's much more speculative. But Solana survived much like Ethereum survived in 2018 when it went down 97.5%. Solana was down 98% in a very similar circumstance. And what I saw from the community is they rallied behind it. And they continue to build. And that was a signal to me that something different is happening. When I looked at it, I could see that there was a chart pattern that I started to like to make me think that it was going to outperform Bitcoin. So I started buying Solana all the way through from June till November 2020. I didn't quite get the low 2022. And I've just... since then, been looking at the network activity, all the things being built on it, how it's happening, and thought, you know, this is a fast, reliable, consumer-based chain which we could see mass adoption. Then there was a couple of game changers over the year. One was the ability to create compressed NFTs. Compressed NFTs mean, you know, NFTs can be expensive to mint on Ethereum, but on Solana, you can mint a million for $100. So that changes what you can do with NFTs. You can use it for ticketing. You can use it for all sorts of things. So that became extremely interesting to me. Then the next phase was learning about FireDancer. Now, FireDancer is a second validator to Solana developed by Jump Trading, which allows the Solana network to potentially go to 1 million TPS. Considering Solana is one of the fastest chains in the world at a theoretical 65,000 TPS, this scales it beyond anybody's imagination. So that makes it possible to use for the big applications in TradFi, stuff like high-frequency trading, exchanges, securities clearing, settlement, custody, all of that stuff. So when I saw that, I thought, okay, this is a total step change for crypto. So that got me very bullish. And then I waited for the chart pattern to confirm. And it was the breakout of the Solana ETH cross. And that was the signal.
Yeah, I definitely personally echo that as well. I'm seeing the Solana ecosystem growing stronger and stronger. And because recently, not just what you mentioned, but also the inscriptions on the different L1s. We saw, for example, the ordinals for Bitcoin, but Solana has SPL 20 as well. So now the Solana ecosystem have its own meme coin bunk and all of those different wallets, different trading. I think you're right. Definitely we're seeing this growing very strong. And the price performance is very impressive. I personally haven't gone big on Solana yet, and I seriously regret. So
I cannot say the same. Go ahead.
I mean, what I see is just, you know, what you're describing, Alice, is activity, right? It's vibrant. That's why it's performed so well.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of vibrancy going on in that ecosystem. You know, others will have their time in the sun as well, but this, it just feels alive. And if it feels alive, it comes alive.
That's a very good point. That's a really good point. And I'm curious, sir, because I want to also know what you hold. What's in your portfolio right now and any changes recently this year?
Well, my big change was this year. Last year was adding Sol and adding ETH. And this year was switching a large part of my ETH into Sol. So I'm very overweight Sol, less overweight ETH now. Hold very little Bitcoin. And then I have, you know, the typical shrapnel dust you've got left in your wallet from the previous cycle where you got bets wrong. So I've got a bunch of that stuff. I hold some of the newer tokens like Sui to see how those ecosystems, because that's great technology as well. Other bits and pieces. But my main focus for this cycle is Solana. In fact, I've just interviewed Anatoly. He's going to be on Real Vision, I think, on Friday. So that's a great interview, and you'll get a scale of what is going on in Solana from that.
Exciting. And I wish I heard your portfolio earlier, by the way. I wish I'd heard of this earlier.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean I'm right.
So far,
100%, yeah. But excited also to understand a little bit of other things with you. We have prepared for you like a rapid fire quiz. Of course, you don't need to take it rapidly, but we have a couple of questions for you today just to kind of wrap up this call. We are already 40 minutes into it. We have designed it for 45 minutes more or less, so we are very much on time. And of course, the idea here is for you to reply, I mean, as fast as possible. Then you are, of course, free to give us more context on why is that your answer. Are you 100% ready for it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so let's start. First, would you rather buy ETH in 2017 at around $10 or SOL in 2023 around $14? What do you think will end up playing out better?
Oh, that's a really hard question. Probably ETH.
Any reason behind it, like the more conviction, for example? One thing that I was discussing with Alice, I mean, earlier today, I think there are some ecosystems that are getting too big to fail in crypto a little bit, let's put it like this. Not exactly, quote unquote, of course, but like, is something around that? Like, why is that answer?
I think you need to think of Ethereum as Android and Solana as Apple. One is a closed ecosystem. One is a much broader open ecosystem.
Makes a lot of sense.
And so over time, those tend to accrue more value. What I'm interested in is this cycle, where I think that Solana gets repriced as the number three layer one.
Wow, that's quite interesting to hear. And another one, I think that not a lot of people know that you are a very big NFT guy as well, or just like, I would say, I mean, someone that really believes in the NFT technology as it is. And I want to ask you, best NFT community of communities that I kind of know you're into it. You can confirm it later, of course, but I mean, we have on the list here Punks, Apes, Wrecked Guys, Crypto Dick Butts, MFers. Like, which one is the best community? Of course, you're not talking about assets, you're not talking about value, just community driven.
Obviously, the Real Vision Collective. You know, we have a big community of like 10,000, 15,000 token holders, from the Genesis NFT to Real Vision is a very special community. Otherwise, I like them all. They're just very different in nature. You know, I love the irreverence of Wreck Guy and MFers and Crypto Dick Butts. They're more fun. And then Punks is kind of a more serious idea of, you know, I'm an OG in this space, look at me, you know, let's network together. Bored Apes is a broader concept of where can Web3 go and what can we all do to do that. So there's a lot of good communities out there, and there's a lot of, you know, communities that are dead as well after the last cycle. So some will thrive and survive. Others won't. And then there's obviously the arts community, which is enormous and growing. And we're just seeing extraordinary things happening with generative art, mixing, blending with photographic art, AI art, traditional art, you know, and eventually we'll see NFTs much more prevalent in the music space and others. So there's a lot to come in NFTs. We've barely started.
And just like, I mean, I'll add a question on top of it, not related to the rapid fire quiz here, but just like, I know that you also have like some businesses in the NFT or entertainment space as well, like sports, music, etc. Do you feel like that is something that's a narrative that is going to end up playing out this cycle, more long-term type of thing? What's your take on this?
Yeah, look, we can see big brands coming into the space. We've seen the sports industry coming into the space. We've seen the car industry via racing and other things coming into the space of Web3. We've seen music is hard because there's so many IP rights and so many people involved. But there's a lot of great teams building out products and trying to navigate that. So we're seeing that. The entertainment industry has only done a small amount in the space, but the trapped value that exists in corporations like Disney, Web3 can release a lot of that. So I think we'll see a lot more from all of these communities in this cycle. The last cycle was the first time that they've been involved. And, you know, it scares people when you have to go through a crypto cycle. But over time, they'll learn what's right and what's not. You know, people like Adidas learn all the way through the cycle and continue to do things in the cycle. The big fashion brands out of France have been all the way through this cycle. They've understood digital scarcity is no different than physical scarcity, and all they sell is physically scarce goods like expensive handbags. No reason to not have digitally scarce goods too. So yes, I'm still very bullish. I think of the next bull market, or this bull market we're starting, as the everything, everywhere, all at once cycle, because I think we'll see DeFi explode. We'll see the financial system getting much more heavily involved. We may see the first central bank digital currencies roll out. You know, we'll see the expansion of stable coins and the uses of those. We will see a growth in the Web3 use cases from brands and cultural communities of relevance. We will see institutions investing in the space. We will see a lot. So this cycle is a really exciting, because so much has been built ready for this.
That's awesome to hear, Raul. And I do believe that a lot of things are going to just shift from what we have seen in the past, because narratives are always shifting, always changing. And that's how every market is, and crypto is absolutely no difference. Next question, a portfolio made only of BTC and ETH, or only altcoins? I think that is kind of like, complicated question, but what would you rather have?
Well, it depends on your time horizon. If your time horizon, it depends whether you can choose good altcoins. I find that very hard. Some people are good at it. Generally speaking, a portfolio of ETH and Bitcoin held over any extended period will do better than most things. Most altcoins never get back to the previous highs versus Bitcoin or ETH. So, you know, if you're a newbie to the space, just hold the two key assets and chill. Go to the beach. Don't need to do anything. If you're a true degen, then you'll end up trading altcoins. The way to deal with your inner degen that many people have is very simple. put 80 or 90% of your assets in ETH and Bitcoin, and the rest you can trade. And then you can't mess it up. You can't go horribly wrong. You can't make a mistake in an ecosystem that gets rugged or something like that.
100%. The hard part, I would say, is to keep that 10% as 10%. If you're too new to the space, chances higher are that you end up like with that 10% becoming, I mean, less than 10% of your portfolio. But like one question now that I think we'll tell you and people that are listening, that we are very much into Real Vision and your content in general. It's more of a personal question, not necessarily related to crypto, but doing lives and AMAs for rest of life without drinks or cooking with air fryers for rest of life. That's a tricky one as well. And I know you like it.
Do you drink for every AMA or live?
No, I don't. I just do it for fun, like once a month or so. I do this drinks with Raoul thing, and you can, anybody's not seen them, you can just go to my YouTube channel, which is Raoul Pal, the journeyman, and they periodically come on there, and I have a bit of fun.
Love it.
You know, because I do so many interviews, it's just fun to kind of engage with the community on a one-to-one basis, kind of break down the barriers, have a drink, have a laugh, make fun of each other, and hopefully give a bit of alpha as well. So the answer to your question is, can I do the AMAs without drinks, or do I have to cook with an air fryer for the rest of my life?
Exactly. It's a hard one, I know.
That's hard, because I just think, air fryers and me, I just don't like them. I'm going to go with, I would do the AMAs without drinks.
Hey, okay. And we can tell it's a hard answer, because you're just like, I'm going with, I don't know. Yeah, I'm thinking. Yeah. So I think so far, that's probably the hardest one to answer. But like, I would say that, I mean, you got to, I think you got it right, because cooking with air fryers definitely is, I don't know. I think I'm on your team there. Not something.
But I love air fryers. I don't know what's up with that, guys.
It just doesn't feel right. It's just like a hot box that you cook food in. Feels like a microwave, and I don't use a microwave either. I like the creative process of cooking. I like flame, and I like, you know, oil, and I like, you know, how that all does. It's just a great creative process.
And now I'm really hungry.
And it's good, because I do know that some people, depending on the time zone, are either now getting close to lunchtime, or just like some people in the evening also going for dinner. So last but not least, another question for you. This has a time horizon, which is 5 years. Raoul, would you rather hold ETH or SOL for the next 5 years? That's a trick question, because 5 years may, of course, fall into the bear market again. Like, but what's your take on this?
It's another good question. Because, no, I think SOL will stabilize against ETH over its next bull cycle, over the next bear cycle. I'm probably going to go for SOL. Probably go for
SOL. That's interesting. Yeah, I like that answer. And I definitely, like, honestly speaking, I don't think you can go wrong with both of them, to be very honest. But let's see what the future holds. It's going to be very interesting to see. Alice, any takes on that? Like, anything you like to share before we ask Raoul also, like, his final considerations on this live? I think that people learned not just a lot in macrosphere crypto, but also about air fryers and drinks as well. So it was quite a funny event
I
here.
Really love this. And it's just coming back to the original point when we opened the live, saying November last year, 2022, what was happening with the market back then versus where we are right now. I think we're definitely well set. Looking forward, it's very positive landscape from here. So I'm very excited about that.
I am too, and let's see how it goes. Raoul, before we jump, like we wrap up the live, just wanted to ask you if there are any final considerations, anything that you didn't touch on during this live that you'd like to. And also, I mean, how can people get like in touch with Real Vision content, etc.? Please share all of this with us. I do know that now you're also present here in CMC Community, which is a new platform that we're building. Also, would like your takes on it, like what you feel about the live, the environment, more than 2,000 people joining here, live chat, tons of questions. So how do you feel about that as well?
Yeah, so this is great. I like this native experience, because, you know, everybody here is a crypto person, so it's kind of fun. So this is great. What were the other two questions?
How can people actually get in touch with Real Vision content and you? I mean,
yeah, I mean, look, I'm everywhere. So you can find me on Twitter. So at Raoul, RAOULGMI. That's one place. The other is, if you like the kind of content I produce, Raoul Pal, the Journeyman, free YouTube channel. And you can see me interviewing amazing people. That interview with Anatoly from Solana will be out on Saturday. There's an interview of somebody interviewing me. Julia LaRoche came on the platform today. So do that. But the real thing is go and check out the Real Vision platform. It's a truly unique experience. And that's realvision.com. It's free. Tons of content, written, video content, embedded AI to help you understand things. You know, we built out education. We built out so many things. And that's the key point I want to leave people is, listen, it's an exciting space. It's driven by FOMO, speculation, fear and greed. That's all okay. But just educate yourselves first. Understand what drives these things and understand the risks you're taking. Because there is so much opportunity. It's literally the biggest macro opportunity of all time. And it's so easy to just fuck it up by doing stupid things. And it goes back to that conversation we were having before about just owning Bitcoin and ETH and then speculating on other stuff is a much better thing than trying to make the 1000x, the 100x, the 50x in some token because somebody mentioned it to you. That stuff doesn't work. You really have to know what you're doing. So just educate yourself, understand what it is, what the space is about, and the opportunities will come. And the opportunities are much bigger than any other space. So be patient, have a long-term time horizon, and enjoy yourself.
100%. Alice, you unmute yourself. Do you want to say something?
I just want to say that's a really good message. Thanks for that.
That's it, folks. And remember, while we offer insights here, none of this show, of course, is financial advice. We always recommend you to do your own research before making absolutely any investment decisions. Now, to all the people listening to us right now, thank you very much for tuning in. If you want to catch it live, CMC Lives here in action, make sure to download the CMC app and turn on your notifications because you certainly don't want to miss out on this valuable and unique content. And that's it for today, our show with RoPaul. Huge thanks to Alice and, of course, to Raul for sharing his insights and helping us understand even more of macro and crypto markets. See you guys here in the next CMC Live. Stay informed, stay safe, and keep hodling. Bye-bye, guys. See you soon.
Thank you, Raul. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, all.
People are going to lose their minds. This is a moment in history unlike anything humanity's gone through. It's a very different world for humans to come.
Take a step back and see the broad picture, which is the way all these technologies are interlinked.
Because this is all about exponentiality, and humans can't think in exponential terms.
How consequential do you want to say machine intelligence is? It's almost certainly as consequential as writing. How long did writing take to disseminate through the human population? You know, hundreds, thousands of years. And we're dealing with it now on a scale of months.
But in this kind of world, you're compounding 100% growth every year, and the numbers become astronomical.
AI is going to spot patterns in the world that were just completely invisible to us.
Even if you think that the AI and the robots are your demise, you might as well bloody invest in them and make some money out of it. If not, you're just going to be angry man shaking your fist at the clouds.